This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. Today, we're spending the hour learning about the science of gratitude. We'll talk to two people who've studied gratitude and learn about what the research says all about it and what they've learned working on the topic. With us now are Janae Nelson, a PhD candidate at Brigham Young University, and Joel Wong, professor and department chair for the Counseling and Educational Psychology Department at Indiana University. Welcome to both of you this afternoon. Janae, we'll start with you. How do you define gratitude?
Yeah, so there are different types of gratitude. Most people are familiar with the type of gratitude they see on social media, which we call the hashtag blessed trend, which is what Bob Emmons would call gratitude light. And it's that type of gratitude is more of like a self-presentation of gratitude. And it's all about this yourself and what you have. And that type of gratitude obviously can actually lead to a lot of unhappiness, especially for the other people who are viewing your feed if you're doing those types of posts. But there's another type of gratitude. The gratitude that is most commonly researched in science is more of a more genuine gratitude. And that gratitude, Bob Emmons says it consists of two elements. The first thing is an affirmation of goodness, which is just recognizing that there are good things in your life, that there are things that you have benefited from. And the second part of that gratitude is figuring out where that goodness in our lives comes from. And so acknowledging that there is a source outside of ourselves where those benefits come from. And so those two components of the genuine type of gratitude that leads to human flourishing are an important part of gratitude that helps build relationships and improves our health.
You mentioned the hashtag blessed is like a gratitude light, and you're also saying it's one of the two ways, I think, of sharing genuine gratitude. I would say that a lot of people that observe on social media or post on social media may think it's more of an act posing out there, that hashtag I'm blessed, but maybe it's just for show. Is it really
absolutely
gratitude?
Yeah, absolutely. So that would actually not be a form of genuine gratitude. That's the gratitude light, right? So that's the type of gratitude that can actually lead to negative well-being, and not only for the poster, but for the people who are viewing it, and maybe especially for the people who are viewing it. But that's kind of what's pervaded social media. And we kind of have come to equate our gratitude expressions with these kinds of really shallow self-presentation forms of gratitude. And the reason why it's important that we distinguish this from the very beginning is that there are critics of gratitude that say that, you know, gratitude is for people who have a lot of things, or for the rich. But, you know, what about people who are going through hard times? What is gratitude for? And so we want to disassociate this type of shallow gratitude light, where it's just about what you have, it's about your possessions, versus a more genuine gratitude, which looks to the source of the good things in your life. And it's more relational. It points you towards the people in your life.
Joel, do you define gratitude differently than Janae, or are you on the same page?
Yeah, I think it's somewhat similar. So I think of gratitude as appreciating the benefits that you have and appreciating others for the benefits that you received from them. So you notice it's almost like a two-part definition, and the second part of it speaks to what Janae has mentioned about the source. The first part of my definition, you notice, doesn't necessarily involve a source. And this is an area where scholars differ and have different perceptions of perspectives on how to define gratitude. There are scholars who believe that if you can't identify a source, if you're not thinking about whom you're grateful for, then that's not really gratitude. That's merely appreciation. And then the others who take a more inclusive, a broader definition of gratitude that say it may or may not include acknowledgement of the source or a person who's given you these benefits. The way I think about it is I want to be able to, I define gratitude in a way that is more similar to how lay people think about gratitude. And when you ask lay people, sort of person on the street about what you're grateful for, they don't necessarily or always identify a source, so it includes that gratitude for the sunshine or the rain. And so I wanted to be inclusive of how these individuals think about gratitude. At the same time, I think there's a lot of benefits in focusing on the source-based forms of gratitude. I think it's underemphasized. I think it needs more attention. I think it confers a lot of benefits. And I think it needs greater attention from researchers as well as from people in general.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the source-based forms of gratitude? Is that when we're talking about something we're thankful for, like a thing, a possession?
Yeah, so when I say source-based, I mean that you're able to identify not just the benefits that you have, but where they come from. Mm. And often, typically, it involves a person. Well, it could involve a person, it could involve an organization. And for religious people, it could involve a higher power or God. And that's for acknowledging the source is important. And if you go one step farther, to also express gratitude to that source, I would say that's even better. And I can talk more about that if you like. But if you can't identify a source, then the notion of expressing gratitude to someone else doesn't even factor in, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. That's really interesting. And I know there's different types of gratitude, interpersonal and intrapersonal. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so the way you've categorized it is exactly the definition that I provided. I was just trying to avoid those words, because that's the words I use in kind of my academic writing. But that's exactly the way I think about it, that gratitude has an intrapersonal component, which is, it's just you're grateful in general about things, so, the sunshine, or I'm grateful for my health. And in the interpersonal, where you are explicitly acknowledging the source of gratitude, the gratitude is directed towards a person, or typically a person who you acknowledge conferred those benefits on you.
Mm-hmm. Well, Janae, is there a difference between appreciation and gratitude, or are they the same thing?
Gratitude scientists would argue that they're different with different outcomes. Appreciation is most often associated with good, positive feelings. And gratitude has that pro-social element. And so there are some philosophers that would argue, Tony Manella in particular would argue what you were just talking about, that type of intrapersonal gratitude would actually be appreciation because it doesn't have an interpersonal component. But that's, again, there's lots of different ways to view this. But there are some people who do lean towards that relational component when distinguishing appreciation from gratitude. So gratitude would include a source in that matter. But I would tend to agree that people in general do often think in terms of, like Joel has said, grateful for this beautiful day. I'm grateful for, this rainbow or this beautiful scene. And so I think that is a real and important experience in gratitude. But you might be experiencing more of an appreciation for those things versus an actual gratitude, which has more of a component of reciprocity. So it's really difficult to reciprocate, to this. For example, going out on a beautiful nature walk, you can feel a lot of gratitude for nature, but how do you reciprocate that unless you can attribute it to some kind of a source? But regardless, I don't think there's any argument that both of those experiences, both gratitude and appreciation, are good for you. And they produce positive feelings and create restful states in the body. And so they can have kind of similar physiological effects, but may have very different social effects.
So would it be fair to say, I'm just trying to see if I can understand this concept, that when you're grateful, when you're showing gratitude, as you mentioned, the example of going out in nature, you would be grateful to maybe a higher power for creating the nature that you're observing. Whereas if you're appreciating it, you're just appreciating the nature around you and the beauty.
Correct.
That's interesting. And, you know, I just wonder if there's been some sort of misconception with the way we observe gratitude. I feel like we're taught things like, yeah, you should say, we're grateful that the sun is out today. What a beautiful day. Is that a hindrance for learning how to practice gratitude?
I don't think it is. Like I said, I think that it has, there's evidence that they have similar physiological benefits, both types, you know, both appreciation and gratitude. The element of this, that social aspect, though, is what takes it another step further and promotes those pro-social behaviors of paying it back. And like Joel mentioned, that is a really important part of gratitude.
Well, we're going to take a quick break, but before we do, Joel, how important is gratitude when it comes to mental health? We have about a minute here.
Yeah. I could go on and on about the benefits of gratitude for mental health. Of course, you know, in a nutshell, if you think of solely the appreciation components of gratitude, and bear in mind, as Janae said, not everybody agrees that's gratitude, right? But that appreciation, where it's just more intrapersonal, it's a way of, think of it as a positive radar where you're developing the ability to scan for positive features of an environment, right? When you talk about the interpersonal dimensions of gratitude, then there is, as Jenny said, there is the added social benefit that comes with forming greater relationships.
Well, we'll continue this conversation after a quick break. I'm Miriam Sobe, back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. We're talking about the science of gratitude, how it's been studied, and how you can start incorporating gratitude in your daily life. We're joined by Janae Nelson, a PhD candidate at Brigham Young University, and Joel Wong, professor and department chair for the Counseling and Educational Psychology Department at Indiana University. Joel, before the break, we briefly were touching upon gratitude and mental health. Can you tell us a little bit more?
Yeah. So let's think of, gratitude as a three-part process. I think Janae earlier mentioned Tony Manella, who's a philosopher who argues that appreciation is not really gratitude if you don't have the source. But we all agree that appreciation in itself is positive. So you think of appreciation just as helping a person to focus on positive aspects of your life. So that's like a radar, right? A positive radar. You're scanning the environment to zoom in and hone in on the positive things in your life. And that really helps in terms of mental health and just being able to cultivate positive thoughts. Now, let's add on a second part, which is not only do you appreciate the good things in your life, but you acknowledge the source of the gratitude. That's an interpersonal dimension. Now, not only are you focusing on good things in your life, but you're beginning to feel closer, more connected to the person to whom you're grateful. And these feelings of connection to another person is another benefit of mental health, right? Feelings of connection to a person helps you cultivate mental health. Okay, let's take a third step. Not only do you appreciate the good things in your life, number two, you identify the source, and number three, you express that appreciation, that gratitude to the source. Now, believe it or not, there are actually scholars who believe that only that third component counts as gratitude. And so if you don't express your gratitude, you keep it to yourself, you know the source, but you don't say anything, that doesn't even count as gratitude, right? I have taken a more inclusive definition of gratitude, but I do acknowledge that that third step is also beneficial to mental health. Because now when you express that gratitude to that person, you don't just keep it to yourself, you say it to that person and say, hey, I'm really grateful to you for what you've done. In many ways, you triple the benefits of gratitude because you're thinking about positive things, you are connected to that person, you express the gratitude. And very often when you express gratitude to another person, whether it's orally or whether it's verbally or giving a gift, you are inducing the other person to respond positively to you too. So now you're not only feeling connected to that person, you're likely to have that person respond positively to you. The person might say, oh, thank you so much for noticing my benefits. Or, hey, you know what? Should we spend more time together? And thereby, you're strengthening that relationship. And that in itself is good for mental health, that kind of a stronger relationship with someone else is a positive bonus for mental health.
I think a lot of people would love to have someone give them a gift and be grateful for them. And I can see that paying it forward and creating just a happier society as a whole if we actually put this to practice. Janae, is it too optimistic to think that gratitude is the answer to everything?
I think that might be too optimistic, but I don't think that it's a reach. I think that definitely there's a lot of research to suggest that gratitude is the mother of a lot of virtues and can even change brain structures. There's a really interesting article or an interesting study on that showed that actually depressed patients that practice gratitude had structural changes in their brain after, I believe it was 2 weeks of this gratitude intervention. And that's pretty profound, that gratitude can actually change brain structures. And that's in depressed individuals nonetheless. So that gives me a lot of hope that gratitude can actually be extremely therapeutic in our lives. And as Joel has said, not only therapeutic for us personally, but improving those relationships.
That's really amazing about the brain structure changing. If you're listening and have any questions or comments for our guests today, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. That number is 866-476-3881. Janae, can you tell us a little bit about the research you've done on gratitude and what you've been focused on?
Yeah, so we started, Bob Immens started a project called Gratitude to God Project, and I'm working on that, on the team with him on that. And we're looking at the differences between gratitude to God and interpersonal or human gratitude. And looking at, you know, what differences there are in terms of relationship outcomes and emotional outcomes. And we find some interesting things. We found that for the general population, the benefits of gratitude are pretty much the same, whether it's gratitude to God or gratitude towards people in your life. However, for people who are highly religious, gratitude to God is kind of like a superpower when it comes to those positive outcomes. People report more feelings of more love, more happiness. They report more humility, and they report feeling more relationship improvements than people that are just in experiencing interpersonal gratitude. And so that has implications for clinicians, but also for people who are wanting to start a gratitude practice. If you are a religious person, within your gratitude practice, you can include either prayer where you express thanks to God, or in your journal, write down things you're grateful to God for and have it directed towards towards God. And that will have a profound impact on your gratitude levels over time.
I do want to talk about gratitude journaling a little bit later on. Joel, what is the research that you've done on gratitude, and what got you interested in this topic?
Sure. I can talk about one of the studies that my colleague, Josh Brown at Indiana University, and myself did. In that study, we looked at psychotherapy clients. So this was a study in which every person in that study was seeking therapy, usually with elevated levels of distress, typically a mix of anxiety and depressive symptoms. We randomly assigned the clients who were seeking therapy to three groups. We got one group wrote three letters of gratitude, which they didn't have to send those letters, but they had to write to a person. Second group wrote just about their thoughts and feelings about stressful situations. And the third group just received therapy and nothing else. And what we found, not surprisingly, was that the group that wrote about letters of gratitude to people exhibited the most positive mental health outcomes at the end of therapy, as well as 3 months later, in terms of reductions in psychological distress. So that's an important finding. The other interesting finding relates to changes in what goes on in the brain, something that Janae alluded to earlier. What we did was we put the client, a subset of this group, through an fMRI scanner. And we found that the gratitude letter writers demonstrated a greater activation in this part of the brain called the medial prefrontal cortex when they experienced gratitude in fMRI machine compared to those who were not gratitude letter writers. So the medial prefrontal cortex is the part of the brain that's related to like learning and decision-making and habit formation. Now, we want to be very careful of over-extrapolating what this means in terms of changes in the brain. That's getting a bit too far ahead of us. But it does provide some preliminary evidence that just writing three letters of gratitude might result in some changes in the brain that we're beginning to see after just a couple of months of letter writing.
Janae, is there anything that blocks gratitude? Let's say somebody wants to practice it, but they're just blocked. Perhaps, I don't know, they're comparing themselves to other people online and they just can't get to that point.
Yeah, that's a lot of the focus of my research actually has been when gratitude is hard. And I think that it's a more common experience than we would think, because we value gratitude as a society for the most part. It's pretty uncontested. We feel like gratitude is a virtue. But for a lot of us, it's really hard to feel genuine gratitude. And the reason for that, there would be a lot of reasons, but one of the reasons would be how you value the things in your life and how you attribute them. So if I, for example, if I have this wonderful house and this nice car and this, you know, really wonderful life, but I feel like I've earned all of this, I worked really hard for it, or I deserved it somehow, I'm going to feel less gratitude. And we actually have demonstrated this experimentally by changing how people view the gifts that they received and then measured how much gratitude they felt. So we have some empirical evidence for this. So when the participants were brought to view their gifts as complete gifts, unearned, undeserved, they felt more gratitude. But when they felt like they had essentially earned that gift themselves, then they felt less gratitude. So that's one thing that we can do. We can acknowledge that there are things in our life that we haven't earned, that have come to us by virtue of good graces, and that aren't just by our earning. But it is important to note, and Bob Emmons has has noted this, that it's not a zero sum game. It's not, you know, I either totally earned it or it was totally a gift. You can acknowledge that you worked hard for something and still feel grateful for it, but you also do have to look at the things in your life as on some level as a gift.
I wonder if this is an explanation for folks that, you know, that there's some research I feel like that I've read about where when you make a certain income and you go above that bracket, your level of happiness is no better. Is it related to that?
I think it is. I really do think that there is a connection there with this idea, and a lot of rugged individualism also is quite incompatible with gratitude, because gratitude does require humility. It does require acknowledging that, hey, some of the things I have, I've gotten just because I've been really lucky or I've been really blessed. And it isn't just because of myself. And that's the self-serving, what we call the self-serving bias. We want to attribute all the good things that happen in our life to ourselves. It makes us feel better. And surely that can be the case, but it's important to acknowledge that it's not all earned. Some things are truly gifts.
Well, Joel, sort of on the same topic here, is it difficult to practice gratitude in a digitized world where companies are competing for our undivided attention? And I say this because it seems like to practice gratitude, you need to have some quiet and some time to reflect.
I would say yes and no. Yes, in social media and, you know, all the distractions on the internet might make it harder for us to be able to focus on a particular activity. But gratitude doesn't take a lot of time. Well, first of all, the interpersonal dimension of gratitude, where especially if you're expressing gratitude to someone, that can be done either orally or it can be done even through social media or any kind of electronic communications like a text message or an email. So if you are someone who is actively engaged with electronic devices or social media, instead of telling yourself that you have to completely disengage from all of these activities to practice gratitude, you could use those activities to practice gratitude, right? So number one is actually an example like sending an email, text message, social media to express gratitude. Number two, there are now a lot of opportunities for you to use digital tools to maintain a gratitude journal. You know, the gratitude apps that you can use. My research team has developed a really simple, basic, no-frills gratitude app that one can use for journaling. Just kind of write down things that you're grateful for, and then you could even do it in the form of online group-based gratitude journaling, where you do it together with a group of people. So in a study that I'm currently conducting, where it's a group program I developed to help people cultivate gratitude across 6 weeks. What they do across those 6 weeks is they don't just write about what they're grateful for privately. They do it in a group, in an online group, where everyone can see each other's gratitude journaling. So there is sort of encouragement to keep at it and to keep doing it. And then they come together and talk about it. So that social dimension plus the digital dimension can come together in very meaningful ways.
I was actually going to ask if gratitude as a group is more rewarding than practicing it by yourself.
I would argue that's a research question I'm trying to answer, but I hypothesize yes, because of all the benefits of being in a group, you know, kind of accountability, encouragement that you get from someone else, inspiration, because sometimes you don't know what to write about and you read something else. It's like, yeah, I'm grateful for that too. That's true. That's my hypothesis, that it could confer benefits.
We're about to go to a break. Janae, can you give us a little insight into times when people think they're practicing gratitude, but they may not be?
Yeah, I think the hashtag blessed, like we talked about earlier in the show, is probably one of the most common examples, and that it really is just about showing off what you have. And it's about things. It's not about it's not about other people, and it's not, you know, it's more self-centered, in other words. So in those cases, I would say that's gratitude light. That's and certainly it can make you feel good in the moment, but in the end, it may make you feel worse because your gratitude is centered on your stuff and things can come and go. And so can circumstances. Circumstances can change. But finding gratitude in all circumstances is really the trick. Being able to be grateful, you know, when you're going through severe health problems, for example, there's research that even people going through severe health problems can find things to be grateful for and benefit from that. And so, but the component would be, you know, not just focusing on things and on stuff, but on those more deeper, more abiding things that you can be grateful for, like relationships.
We'll be back after a quick break. We're talking with experts on the science of gratitude, its impact on our mental health, and how to practice gratitude in our daily lives. If you have any questions or comments for our guests, reach out to us on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. I'm Miriam Sobel. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. We're discussing the science of gratitude and its positive impact on our mental health and well-being. We're joined by Janae Nelson, a PhD candidate at Brigham Young University, and Joel Wong, professor and department chair for the Counseling and Educational Psychology Department at Indiana University. Janae, I was just thinking about this during the break as we were talking about the gratitude light stuff. I recently saw a post on LinkedIn where someone was saying, please stop taking pictures of yourself helping those in need and posting it all over social media. Is that a form of gratitude light, trying to show that you're grateful for the life that you have and you're helping other people?
Absolutely. Roy Baumeister talks about this as, again, it's that self-presentation. It's about what is the goal of your post? Is the goal to show off and to get kudos for what you've done? Or is it to genuinely uplift other people around you by sharing this gratitude? And I think that's kind of the litmus test right there, is the your motivation behind what you're posting. And that motivation makes people feel differently. If you're just doing it for self-preservation or self-presentation, a lot of times it makes people not even like you because they're making judgments about you. Or it can make them feel really bad about themselves if you're posting about this brand new thing you got, for example, and it's something that you don't have.
Mm-hmm. Well, earlier we talked about the impact gratitude has on mental health. Joel, what happens physiologically? Is there anything that it affects that way?
Yeah, there's... there's some fascinating research even on the physiological and health benefits of gratitude and gratitude as well as gratitude interventions have been associated with a bunch of physiological outcomes like lower blood pressure, better sleep, for example, and even moving into health behaviors. More exercise. Actually, that was one of the studies, first studies on gratitude interventions by Bob Emmons, who found that people who participated in gratitude interventions were more likely to exercise. And we all know the health benefits of physical exercise, right? Which you can see why it leads to lower blood pressure, better sleep quality, lower levels of stress, as evidenced by the cortisol levels. So all of these are health markers that in turn confer long-term health benefits as well as mental health benefits.
Janae, how does gratitude affect our relationships with other people?
Yeah, so I kind of mentioned this a little bit earlier, but for religious people, when you are acknowledging your gratitude to God, it makes you closer. It makes you feel closer to God. And so it improves that relationship. And it does the same thing interpersonally. So when you are acknowledging that somebody has done something for you and you really do feel gratitude towards that thing that they've done, then you also feel closer to them. So it strengthens that relationship. And it it also makes you want to reciprocate. And those are things that we found in our research. So both of those relationship strengthening functions occur interpersonally and towards God.
It sounds like there's just so many positive benefits to practicing gratitude. But Joel, is there a way that it can have a negative impact?
You know, it's that's a really interesting question. There is an entire book that's you know, I have sort of summarizing the research on gratitude, and researchers have found very few negative outcomes that could be associated with gratitude if you define gratitude correctly, not as a form of indebtedness, which is not the same as gratitude. No, indebtedness means if you are obliged to repay someone for what they've done for you, but it's not a positive feeling. It's this feeling of like, oh, it's like I've got this burden on my shoulders that I need to kind of unload because I feel indebted to you. Whereas gratitude is often a positive feeling, like I want to do it because it comes from the bottom of my heart. I want to repay you. Now, with that said, it's possible that, in some cases, perhaps, you know, in such one classic example that's often cited would be, say, if you are in a relationship that's unhealthy, but for whatever reason, you are very grateful to that person, which might make it harder for you to get out of that relationship if that's actually a destructive relationship. Or it might, that sense of gratitude and loyalty to that person might make it harder for you to go against that person, even if you should. Maybe in a case where, say, if you're really grateful to a supervisor who's engaged in very unethical or illegal behaviors. We have seen a little bit of that sometimes in politics. Mm-hmm. And some of that sense of gratitude makes it a little bit harder for you to be able to disengage from that or to report a person to whom you're grateful for, who perhaps needs to be reported to the authorities.
Yeah, that sounds like a whole other topic that we could talk about for a while.
Yeah.
Janae, you know, with the holiday seasons, it seems like these types of topics pop up for folks to be grateful, to reflect on the past year. Do you think people practice gratitude enough throughout the rest of the year?
I think that people definitely get a boost around this time of year. But as far as it becoming a year-round practice, I would be less optimistic about that, which is a shame because, like we've talked about, there are so many positive, you know, effects of practicing gratitude daily. So I would hope that that moves on. I want to backtrack a little bit to what Joel is talking about with indebtedness, because this is another area that I've recently published on. And so aversive indebtedness is like Joel mentioned, it is a different thing than gratitude. There's also positive indebtedness. And this is something that we're newly finding, brand new research on this. Think about the indebtedness you have to your mother for giving you life, for example. You don't necessarily feel bad about that. So indebtedness isn't always a negative emotion. It can be, and it often is, but a lot of times it's not. And especially in societies that embrace more of that interdependence versus our individualism that we have, indebtedness can be experienced quite positively. And indebtedness to God is one example. People feel indebted to God, like they could never repay him, and but that in turn increases their gratitude. And so in that sense, indebtedness, that positive indebtedness can be an important component of gratitude. But it is important to notice that aversive indebtedness is associated with negative emotions and not always a good thing to experience.
So if somebody were feeling sort of negative about some kind of indebtedness that they are going through, that's probably a red flag.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, especially around the holidays, this is a good example. When somebody you go to the gift exchange and somebody gives you a gift that's, you know, way more expensive than the gift you gave them. You feel indebted and you don't, it's not comfortable, right?
Yeah.
But when, you know, when like say somebody that you really love and care about gives you a gift that's more than yours, you might be quite comfortable with that indebtedness. It might actually make you feel more gratitude and more love towards that person. Like, wow, I can't believe they would do so much for me. And so again, it goes back to that attribution and how you view that gift and how you view the giver. The relationship with the giver really makes a difference in whether or not you feel aversive indebtedness versus a positive, what Bob Roberts calls glad indebtedness.
Joel, I want to get to what we can do in our everyday lives to incorporate gratitude for our listeners here to take some solutions with them from our conversation. What would you suggest people do to incorporate it in their everyday lives?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. So I've really made it an important goal in my life, in my professional life, to find ways to promote the lifelong practice of gratitude. And that means not just doing it around the holiday season. And part of it is looking to the research, kind of experimenting with things that I've been doing myself. I've got some suggestions for people to consider. The first and probably the easiest thing to do is to start and maintain a gratitude journal. The key is just to spend no more than a few minutes on it to make it really easy. If it becomes too complicated, it's probably not something you can do long term. But spend no more than 5 minutes a day, but to do it every day or at least five times a week, and just write down what you're grateful for and why. You could just write one thing you're grateful for, or in my case, I write three things that I'm grateful for, and I try to provide a reason why. You can do it in any way. You can do the traditional, handwriting in a journal, or there are a lot of online apps that one can use. There's one that I could recommend if you don't have an idea at all, kind of a platform, and I'm not making any money out of it. It's a nonprofit. That's thanksfor.org, thnx4.org. And that's funded by the Greater Good Science Center, which is a nonprofit. And that's a good place for you to write. And the key is to have a place and a time. Set a time, set a place for doing it. So tell yourself the way to develop a good habit is at 9 a.m., 9 a.m. on my in my favorite chair at home or my couch. That's where I'm going to be doing my gratitude journaling. Now, I have a hypothesis, and this is not been fully tested yet, but something that I've been thinking about, which is that you would be more likely to maintain this habit of journaling if you do it together with others, so that there's that accountability function. And take it a step further to do it using kind of a group-based gratitude journaling. And the thnx4.org platform does allow for an opportunity for group-based journaling, where a group of people can come together and say, 10 of us, we're going to journal together, and we can see each other and what we write. And that encourages us to keep at it and keep working on it together. And that's that sense of accountability. So my hypothesis is that could help you to go even further. The second thing I would recommend, other than gratitude journaling, is to express gratitude to people, kind of heartfelt gratitude. And that maybe like make it a goal to do it once a week. It doesn't have to be oral. It could be in written form. For me, it's a personal goal to do it at least once a week, where, to send an email, a short message to someone to just tell them how you're grateful to them. Not just saying thanks, but kind of explaining, like, hey, you did this for me and I'm really grateful. So I call that heartfelt gratitude that goes beyond simply saying thanks. And one more thing I want to say, and this comes back to what you and Jenny had earlier discussed. There is a little bit of research that I've seen that's fascinating that suggests that gratitude will be more likely to be perceived as genuine and positive if you express the gratitude privately as opposed to publicly. So that sense of like, I'm telling the whole world how grateful I am, is sometimes perceived as less genuine. But when you take the effort to personally and privately tell a person how grateful you are, that can actually be more powerful, ironically and counterintuitively, more powerful than making all these public proclamations.
Janae, what are your thoughts on ways people can practice gratitude?
Well, I think Joel's the real expert with the application, and I think that he summarized it really well. From a religious perspective, I would add that prayer and meditation can also be powerful practices. Where you express gratitude, and whether you're a religious person or not, you can, like I mentioned, do that in meditation. And I think that is also a very centering and powerful practice if you can incorporate that into your gratitude practices.
Janae, do you think that, and I don't know if we mentioned this already earlier, but is practicing gratitude a way to shift your mind focus to become a more positive person? Let's say you always see things in a negative light, but if you practice gratitude, would that change your mindset?
It does. And we see that. We see that people who experience gratitude or who are acknowledging the gifts in their life report more happiness. They report more feelings of love, more relationship closeness. And so there's definitely evidence for that.
We have a few minutes left here. What advice would you give to folks who are tuning in and they want to try gratitude for the first time and they don't know what's the best step to take?
I would say that Joel's given us a lot of great ideas, and that journaling and meditation and prayer, those are all really fantastic ways to get started. And like Joel said, it's not something that should take a lot of time. And even the smallest amount can really have exponential benefits in your life.
And Joel, about the gratitude journal, because I'm taking notes for myself here. Do you have to write the same thing every day? Can you write the same thing every day? I feel like someone once told me, write three things, but they can't be the same every single day. And I was like, I don't have enough time to think about stuff like that.
So I have a theory about why gratitude journaling is so powerful. And that's because we know from research that there's this problem called hedonic adaptation, which is that if you do something, the same thing repeatedly over and over again, you lose a bit of that pleasure and benefit that you get out of it. And something that you used to really enjoy becomes less and less enjoyable. So the question is, well, could the same thing happen with gratitude journaling? I think the trick is the way to avoid that is to introduce variety in kind of what you write about. Now, you're saying how do I do that? Or what can I think about? there are many tricks you can use. If for today, I can only think of one thing that I'm grateful for and just my mind is a little bit stuck, I would say, why don't you just write about that one thing, but think about three benefits that you derived from that one thing? And this is where I get creative myself. You know, if I'm thinking about, I'm really grateful because I spent lunch with a friend and had a really good time talking, I would think of, I'll write three things about what was positive about that lunch. So it becomes three different facets of it, of the same thing, right?
Oh, that's really cool.
The other thing that I have done, and I don't have this right now with me that I can make, but I have created 80 questions that you can ask yourself to help you generate different things that you've been grateful for, ranging from the most trivial things like, something like finding parking to really profound and existential questions that you can consider from intrapersonal to interpersonal.
Well, thank you so much to all of you for joining us. We're just out of time. Janae Nelson is a PhD candidate at Brigham Young University, and Joel Wong is a professor and the department chair for the Counseling and Educational Psychology Department at Indiana University. Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. I'm Miriam Sobe. Thanks for listening. This is All In.